A group calling itself Clear Vision Eau Claire began in 2007 based on the belief of citizen engagement and planning for the future of the Eau Claire community. The organization previously brought more than 200 people to see what the area would look like in 2020, which contributed to efforts including the Pablo Center at the Confluence, the Eau Claire Sculpture Tour, the Eau Claire Poverty Summer, and more. Today we talk about some of those issues with current and former participants. Thank you for tuning in this Monday morning on Ideas 88.3 and 88.7. This is the West Side. Thanks for joining us this chilly and dreary Monday morning. We're going to talk about some positive movements in Eau Claire, and specifically the Eau Claire visioning process. We've got board members with us, and it's a really interesting community-centric kind of approach to solving some pretty big issues. So let me introduce our guests today. Don Mowry is a Clear Vision Eau Claire Board of Director member. Don is the former president of Clear Vision and now serves on the executive committee. He's also a professor at UW Eau Claire in the social work department. Don Mowry, welcome to the West Side.
Retired.
That's what I thought. I had second thoughts as emeritus. He's an emeritus professor.
You got it.
Sarah Ferber is with us. She is the state director of Ex-Incarcerated People Organizing, also known as EXPO. We're going to use that acronym going forward because it's a mouthful. But her organization works with a group known as Wisdom. It's a statewide group. And focusing on helping people with conviction histories kind of reintegrate into the community. She also works within Eau Claire's local branch of Wisdom known as Jonah. Sarah Ferber, welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good to have you. And Mike Huggins is a former Eau Claire City Manager and founding member of Clear Vision Eau Claire, and he joins us as well. Mike Huggins, welcome.
Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure. The pleasure is mine, sir. Listeners, if you have a question or a comment, give us a call at 1-800-228-5615. Clear Vision Eau Claire has done a lot. We're going to cover a broad range of topics today, so do give us a call. 1-800-228-5615. But so before we get started with our conversation, we need to learn a little bit more about what Clear Vision Eau Claire is and what the group's goals are for the community. So WPR intern Taylor Pomasol sat down with Clear Vision Eau Claire board member Vicki Hain to talk a little bit about the group, some of its successes, and the plan for the future.
That means that we want to get citizen involvement in decisions and anything in the community that is of interest to them, or they see problems, or they want to see growth. You know, if we can get the citizens of our community to collaborate and cooperate and talk to each other and find out what's important to everyone, then I think that we have a better community to live in.
And how did that idea link to the first goals and events that you guys put on?
I think the whole premise behind getting this group of people together was a collaboration between a lot of different organizations, public and private, that said, you know, we can't rely 100% on our government to make decisions for the community and to know where to spend their dollars. So the idea was to bring people together, ask them what they think is important and where they want to see our community. And at that time, it was in 2020. And by bringing them together, then the organizations that have the opportunity for the funding and stuff can have a better idea of what the citizens want and what the priorities should be.
To get people involved, Clear Vision created an implementation committee that made a list of community stakeholders. This included writing letters asking for participation to stay-at-home moms, business owners, and minorities.
We're going to do a similar thing now, but more so with electronics because of the way that we've evolved. We have an opportunity to use a survey that anybody can register. You need your name, you need an email address, and I think your zip code is all you need. So you're identifying yourself, but you're not tied to the survey. So our idea is to reach out again to this vast population and make sure we're entirely inclusive so that we get all the citizens' input.
What do you consider to be the biggest success of Clear Vision?
Well, there's a couple different things. I mean, the most obvious and the largest success is the Confluence Project, which is now the Pablo Center. That's the most visible thing. That took a lot of collaboration and coordination and the lining of the stars to get that done. So knowing that that was a project to be done, I mean, that's the most visible. But I sit back and I think about the sculpture tour that came to Eau Claire. That was a great idea from a couple people that were in a group called Quality of Life that said we needed to do something. I mean, that's been going strong for a lot of years, and it's almost become something that we expect, but it's a lot of work to do. We expanded the community gardens. I mean, there's just been a lot of people that have gotten together to do some great things and have great ideas that might have spurred from the initial talks but went down a completely different path.
On Thursday, Clear Vision announced they would be renewing the vision and their efforts in the community. The group will reach out to citizens and see where the city should be in 2030 and 2040. These new surveys will determine the new focus of the organization.
The survey is the key to get us started, but that's just one piece of it.
If you want to be involved, new conversation sessions are set to start in January and run through April in the Pablo Center. For Wisconsin Public Radio, I'm Taylor Pomisil.
Thank you for that, Taylor. And to kind of elaborate on what the group's process has been, I want to bring in Mike Huggins now. And Taylor did reference to planning for 2030, 2040. We're going to touch on that a little bit later. But Mike, why is it important? I mean, we do have government services. There are nonprofit groups. Were we finding, did your group find that there was less than ideal communication between the two? Or, you know, where does Clear Vision fit in?
Well, I think even the original idea with Clear Vision, as we looked at issues in 2006 and 2007, we saw a couple, and when I say we, local government leaders, community leaders, people involved in the community at that time, saw a couple things. There was fragmentation among the government jurisdictions, among different community organizations, and that fragmentation was making it difficult to move forward, to make some decisions and move forward. There was difficulty in finding public spaces where people could come together. And third, there was a challenge in terms of just the problem-solving ability of regular people. You know, could we reduce fragmentation? Could we create spaces where people came together? And could we do some training, build the skills of people to do a better job of public problem solving? So I think that was part of the original idea behind Clear Vision. There were some very specific issues. Vicki alluded to one, the Performing Arts Center, and there were other things that came out of that. But I think that's still probably a key central focus to Clear Vision, creating a space, bringing people together, building their skills, their ability to do a better job of solving problems and overcoming the fragmentation. I think the issue about government is the reality is government is not the center of all problem solving. Sometimes the role of government is to fix the problem. Sometimes it is to bring people together. Sometimes it's, you know, get out of the way. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the things that we've learned in the broader community here. It's how do we bring people together, including government, including other institutions, but also just including the individual citizen to address issues.
I like the idea of training, you know, you're training your citizens basically to become better citizens in a way. That's very interesting.
Yeah, and just a final point that I think that one of the things that's made a real difference in the community over the last 10 or 11 years is that the type of things that have been emphasized in Clear Vision, these relational problem-solving skills of doing one-to-ones and public evaluation, all those types of things, are a very similar set of skills that have also been reinforced by Jonah, you know, the work that Sarah is involved in. And I would guess that over the last 10 years or so, there are probably in excess of 1,000 people in this community that have been exposed to one piece of that training, that have been involved in learning those skills. And I think over time, that makes a big difference in how this community comes together to address whatever problem that we have.
Sarah Ferber, I want to bring you in now. And of course, Clear Vision didn't, you know, create the game. Like there are other groups, including Jonah, that have been at this kind of approach for a while. So tell us a little bit about, you know, why groups like Jonah and Clear Vision are so important. I mean, a little explainer of what Jonah is, first of all.
Yeah, so Jonah is a faith-based organization that fights for social justice. Mm-hmm. So, and it's all different faiths. So that's one thing that attracted me to Jonah, is that it doesn't matter if you're Christian, if you're Muslim, if you're Jewish, or any other type of faith, you're welcome at the Jonah table. And it's not like a religious forum, you know, right? You don't walk in the door and people aren't trying to convert you into their religion. So that's, that part's nice. And like Mike said too, it is a, it's all about relationship. Mm-hmm. So it's the main training that we provide to people is the one-to-one training, and also figuring out what your own self-interest is. Well, in building relationship with people, so in doing one-to-ones and talking with people and listening with people, you start to dig deep into what your own self-interest is. And then you start to really realize why you want something to change, or why you are even talking about the topic in the first place. And so it kind of goes both ways when it comes to that relationship building and what the one-to-ones can do. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Well, what is a one-to-one, first of all?
So a one-to-one is, in at its base, is a conversation, but it's really it's more of a one-way conversation. It's more listening. Mm-hmm. In social work, we call it motivational interviewing, right, Don?
That's one term for it.
Yeah. But it's not, you know, it's different than that. So some of the things that stuck out to me that were different about one-to-ones than just a regular, like, conversation is that you listen 80% of the time and you talk 20% of the time. So you don't go into it with a angle or, you know, a reason necessarily, other than to build relationship and to get to know the other person. The idea is that you're going to have more than one one-to-one with a person over time and really get to know them as an individual. And so in today's day and age, I mean, by the time I was 20, cell phones were around, you know. People aren't sitting on their front porches having conversations with their neighbors. And so sometimes people are like, well, why would I need to have a training to have a one-to-one? I mean, you'd be surprised. Like, I didn't, as much as I like to talk, I didn't know how to listen as well, right? And so it was really learning that skill of, like, just slowing down and listening to what the other person is saying and then asking your questions based on the things that they're telling you. And what I've found, and I know this to be true for myself as well, is that oftentimes it's not that people don't want to answer hard questions, is that we don't want to ask them, is why we don't really dig deep with people, right? Because at least for me, I wanted to be heard. Mm-hmm. You know, when I first got engaged in this work, I wanted my story to be heard. I wanted people to care about the things that had happened to me throughout my life. And so that was a great, you know, to me, when the first time somebody did a one-to-one to me, I'm like, wow, this is awesome, you know? So the same thing goes for other people, too, and that's from all walks of life. So I think when, you know, taking a step back to, you know, what was it like when we didn't have all these electronics and we weren't just driving into our garages and walking straight in the house, but instead we were actually in community with each other. It's kind of getting back to those basics of building relationship with one another and knowing what makes people tick.
Don Mowry, I want to bring you in on that, because I remember when I was in college, I read excerpts from Bowling Alone, Robert Putnam. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was the idea that all these different civic, you know, processes, whether it be a bowling league or whatever, are kind of going by the wayside for a variety of different reasons. So how important is it then for groups like Jonah, like Clear Visional Claire, to kind of create a space? I mean, something as simple as there aren't spaces readily available for people to meet just kind of blows my mind.
Yeah, I think it's really important, and I think Mike alluded to that when he talked about creating public spaces, places where people can get together, share their values, share their interests, and you know, decide what it is that they want to work together on. Mm-hmm. Clear Vision has worked really hard to increase the number of public spaces, and I think we're seeing even, you know, this mindset in our community, places like Shift, where people can come together, have a cup of coffee, meet, and talk about issues that are concerned to them.
So one of the main issues that seemed to have come up multiple times throughout the Clear Vision process, you know, through these different surveys and also just discussions within the community, had to do with poverty. So there was this effort called the Poverty Summit that came to the fore. So, Don Mowry, if you could walk us through a little bit about what that is. It goes back to 2014 at least, right?
Yes, and I think we, in Clear Vision, we had done previous summits where we brought people together and helped them learn the skills to be engaged citizens, mm-hmm. and then allow them to identify the issues. But one issue kept coming up over and over again, and that was poverty. It was part of the city's comprehensive plan. We noticed a lot of research done in terms of how many people were ALICE families, asset limited income constrained.
Employed.
So it seemed to be something that we could tackle as an issue that had already been identified by the community, and we wanted to try just focusing on one issue.
Yeah. That's a big issue. I mean, it's about as big as they come. So, Mike Huggins, how do you, you know, first of all, how did you start to engage with stakeholders? I mean, to kind of identify what some of the specific parts of the problem were.
Well, part of the process of the learning, I would say that Clear Vision's gone through, is one of the challenges is getting people involved, you know, so it's more than just say, hey, kids, let's have a meeting. Mm-hmm. So we actually used our own core practices. So we looked at what would it mean to have a broad spectrum of people in the community, individuals and organizations in that process, contacted those organizations, did one-to-one meetings to try and recruit with the idea that we wanted not only the various organizations, nonprofits, government, business organizations that were concerned about the issue of income insecurity, but also people who were directly impacted by that. We thought it was very important to have that voice. So that's how we began as we were setting up those meetings. And I think over the course of the summit, probably had 300 plus people that participated at some point. And I remember that one of our early evaluation surveys of, you know, who was there, we had about 30%, about one third of the people self-identified as being income insecure. Mm-hmm. So I thought the summit did a good job of getting a broad range of voices in there to talk about, well, what's this mean to us? You know, poverty is a very big, hard to define thing. What's it mean in the context of our community? What are the challenges we need to deal with today and tomorrow?
Was it difficult, you know, getting even that level of participation? I mean, did Clear Vision find any hurdles with regard?
Well, there are always hurdles. I mean, I from my point of view, I think one of the challenges, especially people that are directly impacted by issues of income, is the feeling that they have a voice, right? So it's convincing them that they will have a voice in these meetings, and then overcoming individual challenges, whether it's transportation, daycare, you know, how to get there. One of the challenges we had was all of our face-to-face meetings were in Eau Claire. Well, much of the issue of poverty, income, insecurity is out in the rural areas. How do you overcome that simple transportation thing? So one, convincing people that someone is going to listen, that they have a role to play, that they can be part of, and then helping to overcome just the simple obstacles of getting people to places, transportation, whatever.
Sarah Ferber, you know, why would we need to convince a person that they have a voice? That seems obvious.
Well, I think for a lot of us who maybe grew up with poor or in different situations, we weren't involved in the public sphere, right? Mm-hmm. So like that term, I didn't even know that until I went to college. And then also, we've been in a lot of spaces where our voices were restricted. Mm-hmm. Right. So depending on what that might have looked like. And so there's oftentimes when you're living in poverty, there's somebody else telling you how to fix it or how to change things or how to live your life. And so not very often are people looking at you and saying, well, how do you think it can get better? You know, how do you think things are going to change? And so it is a mindset change. I mean, prior to being involved with Jonah, I had never gone to a county board meeting. I had never been to a city council meeting. I didn't know that space was for me, mm-hmm. you know. And I think that a lot of people can identify with that across the board who have experienced poverty.
We're talking with members, participants in the Eau Claire Clear Vision Group, and specifically right now we're talking about the Poverty Summit. It was a multi-year process where stakeholders from the community in and outside of the city of Eau Claire were brought in to discuss a daunting challenge of ending income security and addressing issues that people living in poverty face. I'm joined by Donald Mowry. He is a Clear Vision Board of Director member. Sarah Ferber is an associate director. She is the state director of Ex-Incarcerated People Organizing, or EXPO. And Mike Huggins is former city manager and founding member of Clear Vision Eau Claire. We're going to take our first break here on the west side. A reminder, listeners, you can call in with your questions or comments. If you're outside of the city of Eau Claire or Eau Claire County, please do call in. There is lots to learn from this process that can be transferred to other areas of the state, anywhere really. 1-800-228-5615. We'll be right back.
Wisconsin Public Television and the Wisconsin Act 31 Coalition are excited to announce the launch of their new website, WisconsinFirstNations.org, a cost-free resource for educators to use when teaching about American Indian Studies in Wisconsin. Lesson plans, videos, professional development opportunities, and more resources are available at WisconsinFirstNations.org.
Support also comes from the Eau Claire Children's Theater, presenting A Little House Christmas, based on the works of Laura Ingalls Wilder, December 7th through the 16th at the Oxford in Eau Claire. Details are at ecct.org.
You're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rich Kramer. We're talking with members of the Clear Vision Eau Claire group and talking about Poverty Summit, the Eau Claire Poverty Summit. It was a multi-year study and that came up with a number of issues that the group wants to address, and we're going to get into a little bit of the action plan that this group put together. But before we do that, I have to let you all know, if you don't already, that we are in the midst of a fundraising drive for Wisconsin Public Radio. You can donate at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. We have a few different options if you want. You can ask for one of the food banks to offer a gift or match when you give $10 or $20 a month. You will rely on the Ideas Network programs moving forward in 2019, so help us get off to a good financial start in the new year with your pledge right now. Again, it's WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Again, we're talking with members of the Clear Vision Eau Claire group. I am joined in the studio by Don Mowry. He is a member of the board of directors. Sarah Ferber is the statewide associate director of Ex-Incarcerated People Organizing, or EXPO. And Mike Huggins is former Eau Claire city manager and one of the founding members of Clear Vision Eau Claire. So, back to the Poverty Summit. I want to talk, we talked about learning one-on-ones with the stakeholders and participation in that. So then we get to the action items. And there was a number of teams, I understand, Don Mowry, that were formed to kind of respond to what you as a group found. So how did that work?
Yes. Well, the Clear Vision process, again, as Mike alluded to, we're training citizens to be engaged and giving them the skills that they need in order to reach out and pursue things that 'll make our community a better place. As part of that training, they kind of self-identified into some of the issues that were brought up and formed action teams. And then those action teams worked to develop a charter statement, which basically was the mission of that team, mm-hmm. and then an action plan. I think we had 9 teams, wasn't it? And at the end, and they all developed their charter statement, their action plan. And again, I would consider it a success in that we've trained those people. They'll take those skills out in the community, whether or not their action team accomplishes the goal. I would say about 5 of the 9 action teams actually did a really good job. 4 of them struggled and eventually disbanded. Mm-hmm. For example, I think one of our star teams was the Kids First Eau Claire Action Team.
Yeah.
And they work together, and they've developed a multi-year plan. They have 3 major projects already in place, and they have plans to do more. They're developing a parent partners program. They were able to get a curriculum from another best practice in another state. It'll be a peer support program, families working with other families or parents working with other parents. Western Dairyland is going to implement it as soon as they're able to secure funding, and they're applying for grants for that through the Kaplan Foundation. They're reviving the Eau Claire Coalition for Youth, and those of you in the listening audience may remember that was a collaboration that was, I think, spearheaded by Betty Wall, the late Betty Wall, and it lasted as long as she was involved and kind of fell by the wayside, but they're trying to revive that through a more online or web-based communication plan to bring people together around common interests and issues around youth. And then finally, they're working on child care, the lack of affordable child care, and they're doing a community readiness assessment to come up with a plan to effectively address that issue. So those are just three. I mean, that's one team and the areas that they're actively working in, and they continue to work today.
All right. Thank you for that. 1-800-228-5615 if we've got a if any of the listeners have questions or comments about this process, about the Clear Vision Group or what the Poverty Summit is all about. We did have a call earlier from Patricia in Birchwood. She was not able to stick with us, but it had to do with housing, and I know that was another issue, and it keeps coming up, is access to affordable housing in the Eau Claire area. She was making the point that there's a fear that people will be priced out of the Eau Claire area because of all this economic development, and we've heard bits and pieces of that. So, Sarah Ferber, how would that happen? I mean, the economic development would be a good thing, you would think, but unintended consequences, maybe? Mm-hmm.
It's like revitalization versus gentrification, right? So a lot of the cool stuff that's happening downtown will drive up the desire to live downtown and therefore make it possible for people who already own properties downtown to charge more for rent and therefore now pushing people out. I know, I'm not a homeowner, but I do know that like in the East Hill neighborhood, for example, where I live, you used to easily be able to buy a house in that neighborhood for $100,000 or less. Mm. Now you cannot find a house in that neighborhood for less than $120,000. So just things like that, you know, that start to drive things up. When I moved to Eau Claire in 2000 or in 99, I think we paid $400 for a three-bedroom place, and that's unheard of. I mean, that's not happening today. So granted, it was 20 years ago, but, you know, and that happened over time. But I think with the new stuff that's been happening downtown, it's happening much quicker. We hear a lot about high-end properties being built and high-end luxury apartments and things like that. I mean, first we've seen it with Phoenix Park apartments, and then there's the ones that were near Banbury Place. And then now recently we've heard about the old Grace Lutheran Foundation home, and then now Banbury Place came up again, right? So
yeah.
In my opinion, something that always should be at the forefront is, okay, this is great that this is serving a purpose and there's people who want to get these types of places to live in, but what are you also doing for affordable housing at the same time?
Was that one of the action items that came up through the Clear Vision process?
There was a housing
group. I'm sorry.
Yes, but I think what they discovered was that there were already ongoing active efforts in Eau Claire working on affordable housing and housing homeless population. So they more or less, those that were interested joined those efforts.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see. Mm-hmm. So you didn't want to redouble any of the efforts or kind of cause any kind of redundancy.
Mm-hmm.
So these action teams, you know, they've made these findings. So what I've noticed is that the Poverty Summit process, and maybe this is the same with any of the projects that Clear Vision has done, very regimented, lots of meetings, action teams, I mean, really organized. And why is that important? Mike Huggins, why is it so important to, why not just have some people come together, write some stuff down? I mean, you've got, it seems almost military-like.
Yeah, well, I was struck by the word regimented because my experience is that the meetings tend to be very open-ended.
Okay.
And that the outcomes are not predetermined. I think the idea is that with the nature of the problems we've talked about, whether it's, you know, the food issues and issues with homelessness and housing and income insecurity, these are all issues that are very relational. I mean, they involve the relationships of people and organizations and community. And to make some type of progress on those, you need to find ways for people to discover a shared purpose, a shared commitment. And we think through Clear Vision, and again, the same type of concepts in Jonah, we think that one way of doing that is finding doing a different way of people coming together. So it's not coming together and saying, here's a solution, I'm going to convince you to do that. Absolutely not. You know, it's about discussion and people sorting out where they really feel, what are the tensions among values, and then starting to say, well, what can we agree on to do something about this? So I don't think it's ever been the case we're going to solve it forever. Mm-hmm. We want to make it better, you know, those type of things. And to do that, what we found is it does take meetings, it does take learning, it does take people practicing these skills. So far, we haven't found a replacement for bringing people together and interacting with others. The challenge is always, how do you do that in, you know, a limited number of hours, and how do you bring people together and all those? So there's a clear idea of the types of things we need to do, the outcomes and the solutions and the directions it takes and how it's expressed, very much not regimented. Focus more on a quality process, not trying to control the outcomes.
Vicki Hayne, at the beginning of the program, mentioned, you know, the use of technology in order to get better participation. So, I mean, there's no substitute, you say, for bringing people together, but how are these online surveys helping the group? I mean, does that, can you have one, can you have them both?
I think what's critical today and in the future is how do you blend both online and face-to-face? So many people can't come to a face-to-face meeting. Mm-hmm. So how can they participate, share their point of view, share their concerns? Certainly online surveys are a way to begin to get some idea of what those things can be.
Sure. Sarah Ferber, I want to talk. You were involved in, and I mean, not just through the Clear Vision Group, but this is one of your major, major efforts, is to help people that are incarcerated kind of reintegrate into the community and get mm-hmm. get all the services and that they have afforded them. So the Incarceration Transition Team Charter says that there is difficulty for people returning to the community after being in jail. How does, you know, why is that?
Oh, that's a. I could answer that question for about an hour alone.
Well, we got 20 minutes.
Okay, so a lot of different reasons, right? So one of the main ones being that likely for them to have ended up in jail in the first place, they were living life a certain way. And mm-hmm. that's the way they probably had been living for a very long time, right?
Sure.
And so jail is not going to fix that lifestyle, right? All it does is give them a break, and then they go right back. And so if we don't have some sort of programming, or we don't have things set up for people to transition out of that lifestyle and into a different type of lifestyle, it's just going to be a repeat, right? It'll be a repeat of the same thing, because it's very difficult when you get out. And so say, for example, I'll use myself. I was on fire for change. I was ready to do something different. And there was roadblocks every single day, you know, every single day. So you can't, trying to get my Social Security card. I'll share that little blurb with you. So I have to take the city bus from downtown out to the mall to get your Social Security card. Well, I get there and find out that the paper ID, you know, like the paper driver's license, doesn't work. They won't accept that as a proper form of ID. I need to get my shot records from my doctor. Well, it happens that I go to Marshfield Clinic, so it's not too far, but walking is about a mile and a half down the road.
Mm-hmm.
And so I opted to try to take the city bus back downtown, back out to where it was, rather than walk. I think it was really cold. It was in the middle of the winter. By the time I got those shot records, I also had to call on the way, so I had to find somebody to let me use their phone because I didn't have a phone right away. By the time I got somebody who had the shot records, it was already 3:30 in the afternoon. There was no way I was making it back to the Social Security office. Now, I could have started a job the next day had I had that Social Security card or the sheet that you get from them in my hand.
Right.
And so that's just one example of the many, many things that happen when people first get out of jail that make it difficult for them to, you know, stay on the right track, or however you want to word that.
So, I mean, but when someone is incarcerated, especially for a long period of time, they have some kind of a caseworker assigned to them, that parole officer, anything?
Okay, so yes to a PO. So in prisons, they have social workers. I don't think the social workers are overworked, underpaid,
sure.
You know, just like a lot of people who are in our carceral system. And so they're not getting the services like people typically would vision a social worker would do for an individual, right?
Mm-hmm.
So ideally, what we wanted to see, at least for Eau Claire County, was to have somebody who focused on just that, right, in Eau Claire County. Somebody who focused on what the next week of back into the community would look like. And so through the Clear Vision Poverty Summit, we started developing relationships with people at Eau Claire County and found out that this was actually something they had on their radar as well. And so we kept kind of pushing along. And I do believe that I know that they were going to do something like this anyways. I think that they moved a little faster because we were there, you know, having those conversations and saying, hey, you know, this reentry coordinator is very important. Like, this is, we have our jails are full of people, and if we don't have plans, if people don't have plans when they get out, they're going to be coming right back as soon as they go out into the community anyways. And so by the end of the year, by the end of that first year, there was a grant written by Eau Claire County, the Justice Assistance Grant through the state of Wisconsin, I believe it was, and they had made the decision to hire a full-time reentry coordinator. So
wow.
We had succeeded at our goal, basically.
So that that is knocked off the list, but does the the incarceration transition team, any other objectives? I would assume that.
So around that same time, we did have other objectives. So I think that the reentry coordinator is just one piece of it. I think that having peer supports to work with folks once they get released, folks that understand what that process is like, what it, you know, they've been through it themselves, and also have been through the certified peer specialist training, can be really effective at helping walk folks through that process. And so that kind of became our next mission. Well, during that same point in time, the mental health team reached out to us and said, you know, we've heard that this is what your guys' next goal is. We have the same type of thing in mind. How would you feel about combining with us? And we'll really focus on, you know, mental health as it relates to jail and releasing back into the community. And so that's where the combination of the mental health and the incarceration transition team happened.
With that, let's take our final break here on the West Side. We're talking with Don Mowry, Sarah Ferber, and Mike Huggins. They are all involved with the Clear Vision Eau Claire group. And right now we're talking about the Poverty Summit that is still ongoing, but a lot of the issues that are being addressed through that were identified are being addressed through different action plans that the group has come up with. So we're going to talk more about that when we return. I'm joined by Don Mowry. He's a board member for Clear Vision. Also Sarah Ferber, Associate Director of Ex-Incarcerated People Organizing, or EXPO, and Mike Huggins, former Eau Claire City Manager and founding member of Clear Vision Eau Claire. This is the West Side. If you've got a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-228-5615.
Support for WPR comes from the Wisconsin Alumni Association, committed to preparing today's students to succeed in tomorrow's workforce through the University of Wisconsin's annual campaign. More at supportuw.org. Support also comes from Mayo Clinic Health System, offering Mayo Clinic care as a choice during open enrollment for health insurance. More information is available at mayoclinichealthsystem.org/bestchoice.
You're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio, Ideas 88.3 and 88.7. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for joining us this Monday morning. We're talking about the an effort called the Poverty Summit, and that is put together by a group in Eau Claire called Clear Vision Eau Claire. The idea is that members of the community are asked, you know, what they see are some of the main problems facing the community, and then action is taken. So 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. If you've got a question or a comment, you can dial in whether you're in the city, county, or outside of the listening area. We've got a much broader reach. So if you have questions about how you could take some of what is going on in Eau Claire and use it locally, give us a call, 1-800-228-5615. Joining me in the studio is Don Mowry. He is a member of the board of directors for Clear Vision. Sarah Ferber is Associate Director for Ex-Incarcerated People Organizing, and Mike Huggins is a former Eau Claire City Manager who's been with the Clear Vision Group from the beginning. 1-800-228-5615. Don Mowry, I wanted to go with you. During the break, you mentioned that you kind of wanted to talk about mental health as it relates to what Sarah was talking about, and that is the transition and helping people that have been incarcerated or are incarcerated.
Yeah, I wanted to point out that sometimes things happen that might have something to do with the fact that we're talking about these issues and bringing attention to them. Sarah's part of the Mental Health Access Incarceration Transition Team. She's also on the reentry committee that the county has established to try and look at the issues for people getting out of jail. And one thing that's come up again and again is there's a lot of mental health needs for people who are in jail, and they also tend to be the ones that recycle into the jail again and again.
Right.
And the county board, just there's very few amendments to the next year's budget, but one amendment that did pass was to tap estimated increase in sales tax income to provide more mental health services and hours from a therapist in human services to the jail population. So I think sometimes just, you know, bringing attention to these issues and having it ripple out in the community can cause other good things to happen. It wasn't necessarily a clear vision outcome, but I think it's related to the fact that we're talking about the mental health needs and the needs of people who are getting out of jail.
Absolutely.
And I also wanted to bring up, you know, the city of Eau Claire took some action with regards to affordable housing at its meeting this month. There was a lot of news that came out of that, including a $1 fine for the possession of marijuana. But also within the budget was a $35,000 increase in something called a smart housing program. Sarah Ferber, can you walk us through what that is and how, I mean, $35,000... When you're talking government and city budget, that seems small, but what might be able to be done with that?
Yep, and so it's still, you know, it hasn't been decided exactly what it's going to look like, but basically I was approached asking, you know, what would be a housing idea that we could make an impact with a small amount of money? And I said, well, what about tenant education focused on folks who have a conviction history or folks who have an eviction on their record or people who are otherwise kind of deemed high risk by the landlords? And there's actually someone in our community that provides this training already to treatment corps participants. And so to be able to take, and he's a landlord, he's a property manager. And so to take what he does and expand that, and to be able to offer it to more people. They don't have to be a treatment corps participant. They can be just a community member who otherwise has some blemish on their record. And the idea is that having that graduation certificate or having that certificate of completion of this course would be kind of another positive thing that a person could take when trying to rent an apartment to kind of counteract the negative blemishes that they have on their record.
There's more of that education that, mm-hmm. that helps people deal with some very serious issues.
Well, because you never know if, like, for example, people will call me and I'll say, you have to take every step seriously. And people don't realize that, right? So, like, picking up your application, when you have blemishes on your rental history, like, every step is an interview. Every step of the process, even picking up the application, dropping it off, even if you don't plan on talking to someone,
sure.
Like that's all important. And so we need to spread that message and spread that word out there so that more people are able, better equipped to get a place to live.
1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. Mike Huggins, earlier in the program, we played that interview with Vicki Hain, and she did mention looking to the future, that there's some planning going on, looking out to 2030, 2040. It sounds like science fiction dates, but Lord knows it'll catch up to us soon. So what's the next project for Clear Vision, looking out to those dates?
I don't know. I think the purpose of this next round of convenings is to see what issues citizens want to bring forward. So blending in that survey, allowing people to comment online, taking that information, but then seeing what people talk about when they come together. So we don't know. I do think, though, that one of the things that we're talking about doing is through Clear Vision and broader work in the community is one of our challenges here and elsewhere is how do we renew a citizen-centered vision for local democracy and governance. And I think Eau Claire, the broader community, and Clear Vision and all these efforts are part of that. I've seen that as a challenge and a question that kind of reverberates across the country. And especially in the context of local communities, how do we renew what that means for the ordinary person to have an active public life and to be involved in their communities? So I don't know what the specific projects will be out of the next convening, but I think that process will go in that direction of how we renew what we mean by having an active local democracy where people have an active role in their community life.
It's very interesting. Is that so then responding to maybe, I mean, people, it sounds like there's a concern about people being more disconnected from this, but does that, I mean, are we talking about apathy?
I hear that a lot. I don't think it's apathy. I think people are very interested. They're skeptical.
Yes.
I think challenges that we have is how do we rebuild trust or maybe trust is not, how do we rebuild confidence that government, local government, any government will address the problems that matter to us? How do we build our rebuild our confidence that we can work with others mm-hmm. to address those issues? Those are major issues that we hear again and again. It's how do we rebuild that sense that we can work with our institutions and work with others to address the problems that really matter to us? And I really think that the work we've been talking about today in a variety of ways is going along, it's going a long way in that direction. And I think that the story of Eau Claire as the broader community and some of the things in Clear Vision is starting to be recognized as an example of what can be done in local communities.
Well, Clear Vision got some national attention for its process. I mean, this was a while back.
We're talking real money here, right?
We're talking real money.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was a finalist in an award for innovation in public engagement, and frankly, that $10,000 helped fund the Poverty Summit. That was like seed money to do that. I would say too that you know. In fact, we'll have an author of a book that just came out looking at this process of public work and these things that we've been talking about. We'll be speaking in Eau Claire in February between the first and second stakeholder meetings. And the point he makes is that this work of Clear Vision and this whole process of working with citizens has a lot to say to other communities about how people can play a role in refashioning the future of their communities.
So, Don Maurer, yeah, that's kind of my follow-up, and we haven't gotten any calls. Well, we had one earlier, but we couldn't get to it before the person hung up. But other communities, I mean, how transferable is what's happening in Eau Claire to others? I mean, it sounds like it took a lot of work by a lot of volunteers to kind of come up with the model and push forward with it. So if I'm living in an Amory or a Fairchild or something, or I guess somewhere outside of Eau Claire County, how?
Well, that was one of the goals we had for the ASH award is to come up with a model that could be transferable, could be used by other communities. So we took a couple of the documents we'd been working on, revised them, and came up with a toolkit for other communities. They could use that. We also have a coach's manual for training coaches of action groups. Those are widely available, freely available on the Clear Vision Eau Claire website. We've also experimented with a little, dabble into actually appearing in person and working with the communities. We worked with Barron County and Washburn County to address a caregiver challenge and work with a local group there to train people to do citizen engagement and to address especially in rural areas, the lack of caregivers, both in institutional and home care settings. There's two action groups now, working on that issue in those communities.
Very cool. So they can go just Google Clear Vision Eau Claire, and on the website, it's pretty easy to find these things
right.
for other
And while they're there, they can take our short three-question survey for our community 20 through 30, Renewing the Vision. It's only three questions. They'll need to register, first name, last name, email address, and zip code. But we won't use that information. It's just a way of collecting it and being able to look at are we getting representation from the whole community. And we encourage everyone to take it. It doesn't take very long. There's one of the questions is an open question, so if they have issues that aren't on the list in the second question, they can add them to the list and to look forward then to perhaps attending our renewal, our convening at the Pablo Center, 6:30 to 9 p.m. in January, February, March, and April.
Very cool. Sarah Ferber, we're a long ways off to finding out what people are thinking should be on the table for the next, 20 years. So any things that pop to the fore of your mind? I imagine It might have something to do with folks that have been incarcerated.
Yes. I mean, always looking back to how can we make our criminal justice system better. And I think one of the major ways, and it kind of piggybacks off of what our goal was with the reentry coordinator, but community-based alternatives, community-based, you know, supportive housing, community-based treatment alternatives, that's going to be the solution to overcrowding jails and overcrowding prisons. And it, to me, will be the solution to making it so people aren't going back, right? Because right now people are not getting the treatment they need. They're not getting the recovery, the path to recovery that they need. And so to me, that's always number one on the list.
Well, and I don't want to get into politics too deeply here, but you and I chatted not long ago because for part of our election coverage, I put together a story kind of looking at Minnesota and Wisconsin and the differences within those prison systems. And, you know, I know that Expo, Wisdom, and Jonah have been involved with a push to reduce the prison population mm-hmm. in the state by half. Mm-hmm. So one of the candidates who signed on to that pledge is now governor
yep.
or will be governor.
Yep.
So, you know, theoretically. So, I mean, do you expect any big changes on that front? I mean, anytime soon, or do you think?
Well, we expect him to keep his word. So, and we will do what organizers do, and we will continue to, you know, put pressure on that situation until, you know, the word is kept. So, yeah, definitely. I foresee the recent gubernatorial election making a huge impact on our criminal justice system in a positive way. And I very much am looking forward to the next couple of years.
All of these issues are intertwined. We've been talking this hour on the West Side with members of the Clear Vision Eau Claire group. Thank you so much for your time. I'd like to thank Don Mowry, Sarah Ferber, and Mike Huggins for sharing their discussion. Also, thanks to Taylor Pomisal and for interviewing Vicki Hain. Thank you to Vicki Hain for participating as well. As always, thanks to our caller. We're sorry that we couldn't get to Patricia in earlier this hour in Birchwood, but give it a shot next Monday morning. Next Monday, we will talk about a growing trend of an effort to get more women into politics, both at the local level and statewide. Until then, have a safe and productive week. I'm Rich Kramer. We'll chat again next Monday morning.